What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
On the night of January 9th, 1999, 25-year-old Will Hendrick left home in Moscow, Idaho, to attend a party with friends. He had recently celebrated his birthday, was preparing to start his final semester of college, and was looking forward to auditioning for a play just 2 days later. But Will never came home, and more than 27 years later, his case remains unsolved, leaving everyone asking the same question. What happened to Will Hendrick? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. All right, so real quickly before I get into Will's case, I just want to say thank you to everybody who came out to CrimeCon. I'm actually wearing my Crime Weekly CrimeCon shirt. It was an amazing weekend. We were fortunate enough to bring home the People's Choice Content Creator of the Year Award again. So that's 2 years in a row now, and nobody's ever won the award twice, never mind back to back. And we couldn't do it without you guys. I know most of it's coming from Crime Weekly, but I will say we had long lines every single day, and every year more and more of you come up to me and say, hey, I'm a huge fan of what you're doing on Detective Perspective. And that definitely warms my heart because we are the little engine that could over here, and I like to see at these bigger events that the word about Detective Perspective is getting out there, and that means more people hearing about these cases. So thank you so much for all the love and support. You guys are the ones that allow me and allow Stephanie to do this for a living. We get to live our dreams, follow our passions, and try to pass that forward by helping others. So thank you so much for that. And if you haven't attended CrimeCon before, please consider doing so. Next year, it's in Orlando. If you want to get 10% off your passes, you can use the code CRIMEWEEKLY. That's all one word. Eventually, we're going to have our own code for Detective Perspective, but we'll keep it under Crime Weekly so that way it's all under the same umbrella. But I hope to see you guys there. Speaking of CrimeCon, I did a lot of talking while I was out there and a lot of yelling, celebrating. And then I flew to Atlanta and I filmed another secret project that I can't tell you about yet, but trust me, I'm super excited about it. I can't wait to share. And unfortunately, while I was out there, I spoke a lot as well, and I almost completely lost my voice. Fortunately, it's almost all the way back, but I don't know how long it's going to hold up. I haven't been talking for this extended period of time in a while, so I'm going to try my best, but if there are points where my voice sounds a little raspy, I do apologize. Okay, so now for Will's case. This is going to be one of those investigations where I'm going to go over all the facts with you, and you're going to be sitting there scratching your head wondering, how is this not solved? Because the pool of people potentially involved with this incident compared to some of the other cases we've covered, should be relatively small. However, there are those outliers where a rare circumstance that doesn't normally occur happens, and that's the reason why 27 years later we're sitting here and the case hasn't been solved. The good news is, just like with a lot of cases I cover, there is something here. There is some meat on the bone where I think even all these years later, there is a potential that we could solve it, because it's my belief that more than one person knows what happened that night. We just got to get them to come forward. And that's where you guys come in. So we're going to go over everything we have. We're going to talk about it. I'll give you my opinion on it at the end. And then I want to hear your thoughts. So with that being said, we have a lot to get into. So let's dive into this week's case. William Ray Hendrick, who went by Will, was born on December 24th, 1973, to parents Keith and Leslie Hendrick. He grew up in Lewiston, Idaho, with his three sisters and parents, who were both in law enforcement. Keith was a police chief and Leslie was an officer. A member of the Nez Perce tribe, Will often joked that he was part Native and part cop. His heritage was very important to his identity, and as a young man, he participated in war dances with the tribe, and he also enjoyed hunting, singing, dancing, and spending time on stage. After graduating high school, Will spent a year serving in the Navy before enrolling at the University of Idaho in Moscow, where he majored in drama. His love of acting went beyond the classroom and stage. And one summer, he actually appeared as an extra in the movie Dante's Peak. Great movie. If you haven't seen it, you gotta check it out. While attending the University of Idaho, Will met a man named Jerry. The two began dating and eventually built a life together. By January of 1999, they had been together for 5 years and were in the middle of remodeling their home. They also had plans to get married that May. Will had recently celebrated his 25th birthday and was preparing to begin his final semester of college. On Monday, January 11th, he planned to pick up a $6,000 financial aid check and audition for the play Angels in America. He had been preparing for this audition for weeks and was excited about the opportunity. Tragically, he would never get that chance. On the night of Saturday, January 9th, Will and Jerry were remodeling their kitchen when Will mentioned going to their friend Katie's back-to-school party at her apartment complex near the intersection of C and Almond Streets in Moscow. Jerry was tired and didn't want to go, so Will decided to go alone. And by the time he arrived, it was between 11:30 and midnight, and there were actually two parties taking place at that same location. Katie's party was on the second floor, and it consisted of approximately 20 friends from the college theater department. The other party was on the third floor, and it was attended by former athletes from a local high school. And from the beginning, Katie was concerned about the two groups mixing. She told Unsolved Mysteries, quote, "Because of the two different worlds that were kind of colliding that night, my concern was that there could be a possibility for some sort of confrontation, since Will has no problem being open with how he is and with every opinion." Will was apparently known for standing up for himself and for others, and he was not afraid to get into a fight. So throughout the party, Will was concerned about his friend Karen, who was having problems with her boyfriend. The boyfriend was attending the third floor party, and at one point, Will tried to protect Karen when the two got into a fight. Katie, however, did not want him getting involved, so he didn't. By approximately 2:30 a.m., Karen had left the party, leaving Katie to keep an eye on Will, who was intoxicated. Katie went inside briefly to call Karen and make sure that she had made it home safely, and when she came back outside, Will was gone. She noticed that his car was still parked outside, so she assumed that he had gone upstairs to the other party, possibly to confront Karen's boyfriend. She didn't want to deal with that situation, so she went to bed. At approximately 11:30 a.m., Jerry called Katie and asked if Will was there. She said no, and when she checked the parking lot, his car was gone. After learning Will was not there, Jerry began calling other theater students, but no one knew where he was. Will's parents were contacted and became concerned as well. And when Will still had not returned by Monday morning, January 11th, his friends and family began searching for him. Later that day, they located his 1984 Pontiac parked haphazardly in a parking lot near the intersection of 4th and Jackson Streets. The location was near the Moscow Hotel and was in the opposite direction of where Will lived. Jerry was surprised to find that the car was unlocked and Will's portfolio was sitting on the back seat. He did not believe that Will would have left that behind because it contained all of his artwork. Everything that was important to Will was in that portfolio. There were other red flags as well, according to Jerry. The keys were either in the center console or in the ignition, depending on what source you look at, and the spokesman review reported that Will's work keys were also found on the dashboard. Those keys were used to access university buildings that he cleaned as part of his job, and they were always either clipped to his body or kept at home. Again, Jerry did not believe that he would have left these keys behind. Jerry also noticed that the driver's seat had been pushed all the way back. And this stood out because, according to Jerry, Will normally drove with the steering wheel practically in his lap. Also inside the car was a can of squirt soda. Jerry said it was definitely not Will's. He explained, quote, "There were generally two cups in the front at all times. One was for cigarettes and the other was for chew. There was never a third." And for anybody who doesn't know, when I say chew, I'm actually referring to chewing tobacco. So clearly, Will liked cigarettes and chewing tobacco, and that's usually what he kept in the front seat. On top of everything I just mentioned, both the driver's side and passenger side windows were rolled down a couple of inches, and the inside of the wheel wells were caked in mud, which Jerry could not make sense of. So at this point, Jerry contacted the police, and when they searched the car, they found no obvious evidence of foul play. There was no blood or hair evidence inside the vehicle. At first, investigators did not impound the car because they still believed that Will would return, but he never did. He did not audition for Angels in America on January 11th, he did not pick up his $6,000 financial aid check, and he did not contact anyone. All of it was completely out of character for him. Will's family strongly believed something was wrong, and they urged investigators to treat the case as though foul play was involved, but according to the family, that did not happen. So, family members conducted multiple searches on their own, which was frustrating because they were not familiar with the area and did not really know what they were doing despite their law enforcement backgrounds. Finally, on January 13th, investigators realized that something more serious may have happened. So the car was impounded and processed for evidence. Several sets of fingerprints were recovered and tested, but as far as I can tell, nothing came from it. And we're just getting started with this story. There's more to come. And there's also going to be an unfortunate outcome. We're going to talk about it right after the break. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep, and that's why I switched to Miracle Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it doesn't matter. These sheets will help keep you in the comfort zone so you get a great night's sleep. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and way less laundry. And the most important part, in my opinion, they feel just as good, if not better, than sheets you'd find in some 5-star hotels, but without the steep price tag. So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're insanely comfortable. They're also great for your skin. All that hidden bacteria you find in regular sheets, it can clog your pores and cause breakouts. Miracle Made's antibacterial design helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. I love Miracle Made sheets. I think you will as well. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest by going to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use my promo code detective, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. All right, we're back. And by January 13th, the missing persons investigation was finally underway. However, the case was complicated by the fact that the Moscow Police Department and the Latah County Sheriff's Office were both investigating, but not really sharing information with one another. And this is unfortunate. In many instances, neighboring municipalities will have an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, where if there is a case that's along a jurisdictional line and there could be some cross-pollination, you will work together as one unit to share information to make sure that you're as effective as possible. But in certain cases, there are egos that become involved and everyone wants to be the one in charge, and then that can cause some conflict. And ultimately, the person that really suffers is the victim. They're not getting the best investigation that they should. And that's the real tragedy here. Officers need to put their egos aside and remember what they signed up for in the first place and that's to help others. And if that means working with another agency, that's what you're supposed to do. But as far as the investigation, investigators did speak with the people who attended both parties that night, and everyone claimed that nothing unusual had happened, and they said they had only spoken with Will. There were no fights or anything like that. Some people did report hearing a car, possibly Will's, leaving the area at a high rate of speed, kicking up gravel as it drove away. But beyond that, no one reported seeing anything suspicious. Everyone who attended the parties underwent polygraph examinations, and investigators searched their homes as well. But again, as far as we can tell from what we know, nothing came of any of that. However, I am happy to see that they went to that length because, as I said at the top of this episode, when you're thinking about the pool of potential suspects, you have to think that it's somehow connected to an individual in that house, whether it's the third floor party or the second floor party or someone residing on the first floor or in the basement. Someone there has to know the person who's connected to this, or it's one of the people who were there. So I'm glad to see they took it to the length of saying, hey, that's great. Nobody heard anything suspicious. Although it's not a guarantee that it's going to be accurate, everyone's taken a poly. And on top of that, they went and searched their places. So there's not much more than that you can ask for. Yes, you're going to do background checks, all of that. And I'm assuming based on how extensive they went with the search of these apartments and the polygraph exams, I'm sure criminal histories were ran as well. And it wasn't just the people who attended the party. Investigators also interviewed other residents who lived at Katie's apartment complex. Through those interviews, they learned that at approximately 3:30 a.m., Will accidentally stumbled into a resident's basement apartment. Now, according to the Lewiston Morning Tribune, that resident said that Will was, quote, mumbling and talking tough. The resident asked Will to leave, and he did without incident. That encounter is believed to be the last confirmed sighting of Will. Investigators searched the basement apartment but found no physical evidence, and the resident was never pursued as a suspect. But it is interesting because when you think about what could have transpired here, yes, it could have been someone who was at the party. However, we talked about it earlier, and we always got to be honest. If Will was intoxicated and was known to get into a fight or two, if he stumbled into the wrong place with the wrong person and said the wrong thing, it can go sideways really fast. And it could have been this person or somebody else. We don't know where Will went before this or after it. So it is definitely something to consider. By this point, Jerry and Will's parents were convinced something terrible had happened and feared that Will had been killed. His friends had similar concerns and wondered whether he had been targeted because he was gay. You see, Will's disappearance came approximately a year after Matthew Shepard was beaten to death in Wyoming because he was gay, so concerns about a possible hate crime were high and completely valid. Jerry, however, did not believe that Will had been targeted because of his sexuality. He said that he and Will were both openly gay and had never experienced harassment because of it. Despite all of these concerns, Moscow police publicly stated that they did not believe anything bad happened to Will. One investigator even suggested that he had possibly left voluntarily. And even if this is what you think, you don't always have to say it out loud. We have police departments that don't speak up when they should, and then we have others that speak up when they shouldn't. And this is one of those cases. You can hypothesize behind closed doors, as you should. You can talk about the possible scenarios of what happened here, but why put it out publicly? Not only does it hurt the family members because now they feel like you're not actively working their case, but it also decreases the involvement of the community because some of them are going to believe you when you say, yeah, we don't think anything bad happened. And they're going to assume that you're basing this on actual evidence, not just a hunch. And so therefore, they're not as diligent and they're not looking for suspicious activity. So they may miss something that could have been valuable to the case. It serves no purpose to put this information out there other than to try and reduce fear within the community that maybe there's a murderer on the loose. And the reality is, until you find Will, you don't know if that's the case. So it's actually a disservice to put that out there because you could get someone else hurt or even killed. By early July, there was still no sign of Will, so the Moscow Police Department, the Latah County Sheriff's Office, and the University of Idaho joined forces to analyze the mud found on his car. The samples were determined to be consistent with a broad area of the Palouse region, stretching from the northern mountains to the banks of the Snake River. Unfortunately, because of how vast this area was, the findings didn't really provide investigators with any meaningful leads, so they had to keep digging. Then in mid-July, investigators developed another possible lead after a gay couple, Winfield Scott Motor and Gary Mattson, were murdered in Shasta County, California. Two brothers, Matt and Tyler Williams, were arrested in connection with the murders. Investigators learned that Matt had attended the University of Idaho at the same time as Will, and the two shared a mutual friend named Dan. Dan did not believe that Matt and Will knew one another. However, investigators wanted to explore the connection further. They learned that Matt had left Moscow in 1996, but just days after Will disappeared, he had contacted several friends in an attempt to locate Dan. You see, Dan had recently come out as gay, which reportedly upset Matt. According to the Spokesman Review, Matt was deeply involved in a white supremacist religion known as Christian Identity, which denounces homosexuality and Judaism. One Christian Identity minister who Matt admired even circulated literature advocating for the killing of gay people. So based on that information, investigators considered the possibility that maybe Matt had came to town looking for Dan, encountered Will instead, and targeted him because he was gay. However, I did do some research on this, and as far as I can tell, law enforcement was never able to place Matt in Moscow at the time of Will's disappearance, and in fact, he never even made contact with Dan after attempting to locate him, so it doesn't seem like Matt made it to town. And on the surface, although Matt's a bad guy, this is kind of a stretch, although I do think it warrants investigation. Any lead warrants an investigation when you currently don't know what happened. Anything's on the table. Anything's a possibility. So I'm pleased to see that they went down this path. But like I tell you guys all the time, in many instances, most of the theories you explore are going to come to a dead end. And that appears to be the case here. And for what it's worth, I do want to add that both Dan and Will's partner, Jerry, do not believe that Matt was involved. And as far as I can tell, neither do the police. Months pass without any major updates. Meanwhile, Will's parents and his partner, Jerry, continued speaking with the media, hoping to keep his story alive. In February of 2001, more than 1 year after Will disappeared, Jerry told the University of Idaho Argonaut, while anything could have happened to Will, some possibilities seem more likely than others. His primary theory involved a former neighbor who had also worked for him. Jerry explained that he owned a shuttle service, and the neighbor had been one of his employees. Will would also occasionally stay at this neighbor's house if he was out late so he wouldn't come home and wake up Jerry, so they all knew each other fairly well. However, in 1998, just a few months before Will disappeared, Jerry fired the neighbor after he lost his temper and called Jerry a slur. The neighbor went on to get a job with a long-haul trucking company, and Jerry did not think much of it until he found out that at approximately 4:30 a.m. on the morning Will disappeared, the man checked out a refrigerated truck from a dispatch center in Lewiston, which was approximately 30 miles south of Moscow, and his plans were to go to Florida. That morning, the man moved out of his residence, relocated to Florida, and never returned to Moscow. After learning about this neighbor, to their credit, investigators tracked him down in Florida, but he refused to cooperate with the investigation. I will say, his abandoned home in Moscow, the one that was near Jerry and Will's place, it was searched, but as far as we know, there was no evidence found. This is a great theory, and to this point, one that hasn't been fully ruled out. It is very possible that this person could have had an axe to grind. I'll also put out there, and I don't mean to offend anybody. I hope if Jerry sees this, he's not offended by this comment. But I do wonder what the relationships were. When I initially heard that Will would stay at this neighbor's home on some nights when Jerry was sleeping, not something I would do. Everybody's different, so I'm not judging. But, you know, if I come home late, I'm going to my house with my partner. I'm not going to stay at the neighbor's house, even if I'm going to wake up my partner. I'm going to try to be quiet about it, but I'm going home and I'm sleeping in my own bed. I'm not going to stay at the neighbor's house. So I will say, and I, you know, it is what it is. I do wonder what the dynamics were. Was there something more going on that maybe even Jerry wasn't aware of? Could there have been a lover's quarrel? Could there have been something where Will did come back to the area that night, and instead of going to Jerry's, he went to the neighbor's, and something went south. I'm just saying, when you think about it, can we completely rule it out? Can even Jerry sit here right now and say with 100% certainty, that's not a possibility? I don't think he can. And let me just reiterate again, and you guys know where my heart is by this point. I don't ever say anything to disparage or disrespect the victim or their family. My number one priority always is to find the truth. And sometimes the truth may not be what we want to hear. But I think I speak for most families when I say that even if it's difficult, they'd rather know than go on through their lives wondering what happened. And that's what I'm trying to provide. And I have to imagine that this may be something that has already been considered, but hasn't been said out loud. Well, now I'm looking at it and I'm asking the same questions. It's just something to consider. And the fact that the neighbor was unwilling to cooperate with the investigation and rented this refrigerated truck and drove all the way down to Florida within that period of time, it does not look good for this person. Now, on the other hand, Will's mother, Leslie, had a different theory. She said her nephew's foster brother told her that three young men had been bragging about killing Will. The foster brother identified the three individuals to Leslie, and she recognized all of them from her work as a police officer. Leslie theorized that the young men knew Will and may have targeted him because of her prior interactions with them as a police officer. Leslie did turn this information over to investigators, but according to her, the lead was never fully pursued. I don't know if that's true or not. I will say they got a late start on this one, but it seems to me at least that the investigators were really going hard on this one and were following all the leads. I don't know if they were relaying this information to her as far as where they stood and what they had done as far as this potential lead, but by not sharing that information with her, she's left to come to her own conclusions. And so I don't blame her for feeling this way. She may be right, but it is a little bit contradictory to what we've been talking about tonight, where when any other leads have come in, investigators are on it, even if it goes all the way to Florida. So having these people right in your backyard, you would think that they would go speak to them, and maybe they did, but from where we're sitting, it doesn't look like much was done. But I will say, as a police officer, I've had tens of thousands of interactions with people, and it's all different, right? Some are on the lower end where it's loud music or a speeding violation. On the other hand, it could be a serious arrest. So I would have to know more about these individuals. And when Leslie says interactions, what is she exactly referring to? How deep was this? Anything's always possible. I know I say that. You guys joke about it all the time. But more than likely, if this was just a case where she was busting their chops for loud music, smoking weed or whatever, they're not going to go out and kill her son. If there's more to the story where there's some history there, where she really was going after him and maybe pinned some of them for some serious crimes and they maybe did some prison time, that could be a different story. I'd have to hear that from her. But I will say, on the surface, it doesn't seem as likely as the previous theory that I just laid out. And besides these two theories that were relayed to law enforcement, there were no other major developments in Will's case until September 17th, 2002. That's when authorities announced that remains discovered by hunters in a remote area of Latah County had been identified as those of Will Hendrick. Now, the exact location has never been publicly disclosed. The sheriff's office would only say that the remains were found southeast of Moscow on land owned by Potlatch Corporation. According to investigators, hunters discovered a skull partially exposed from the ground on September 7th and reported it to authorities. Investigators returned to the area and located the lower jaw. A more extensive search was conducted with the help of search canines, but from what we can find publicly, there were no additional remains or pieces of clothing found at that location. But thankfully, with just that jawbone, investigators were able to use dental records to identify the remains as belonging to Will. The sheriff's office and the Moscow police both provided an update based on the news that Will had been found. The sheriff's office stated, quote, "The case is under investigation and being treated as a homicide until shown otherwise." Moscow police, on the other hand, maintain that there was still no evidence of foul play. A police captain even told reporters, quote, "All we've got is some bones that were discovered." Listen, I'm okay internally considering the possibility that you had an intoxicated individual who wandered off and somehow got out to this location and died from causes other than another human being, the elements, an animal attack, whatever you want, right? Just because the bone was found there doesn't mean that's where whatever happened occurred. That's okay to consider it, to have that and to vet that and to look at the evidence as potentially being a tragic accident. But there's no need to put it out publicly. There's no need to diminish the significance of what you just found. Will's family just learned that he's never coming home. This isn't just some bones that were discovered. This is a human being who is no longer alive and potentially was murdered. So if you don't know what happened, just shut your mouth. Don't say anything. There's nothing gained here other than to hurt the family. Some things are better left unsaid, and this is one of them. But I will say, the sheriff's department and their statement, it really isn't much better. It's just worded better. They're essentially saying, hey, listen, we don't know what happened, so we're going to treat it with the highest level that we can, and that would be a homicide. But if something comes out that dictates it's something else, we'll adjust. But they're not saying here, oh, he was definitely killed. They're just being more considerate of everyone involved, which if you're going to say anything, that's what you should be doing. So after these statements, the investigation continued with the medical examiner's office trying to figure out how Will died. But with only his skull and jawbone recovered, they were never able to determine his cause of death. That's not a surprise to anyone. If he was shot or killed, but you only have pieces of his head, they're not miracle workers. There's not much they can do with that unless the injury was to the skull. I will say that they were able to come up with a probable manner of death, and that was homicide. And this was based on all the evidence, and it seemed more likely to them that Will was killed and his body was left in a remote area than this was some tragic accident. So with that determination, the Moscow police finally conceded that foul play was involved. Round of applause for them, guys. Let's give it up for them. Finally, they've come around to the idea that maybe Will was killed, right? And in November of 2002, investigators told the public that they believed Will had been murdered, though they still did not know his cause of death. They also stated that they now believed Will knew his killer and that the person responsible was familiar with both Moscow and the remote location where the remains were found. What a course correction there, huh? They went from not being willing to even consider the fact that there was foul play to now being willing to say that Will knew the guy who killed him. That's a big difference. And I agree with the second part of the statement that the person responsible for this knew the area. No doubt about it, that this is someone who's not just passing through. But as far as Will knowing this person, I don't know how you come to that conclusion. We don't even know how he was killed, but now we know that he knew this person. That's a stretch for me. I think it's very possible he knew the person. It's also possible that this was a random act of violence, that this was a hate crime, and someone who knew he was gay, or at least assumed he was gay based on what they were seeing or what they were being told, didn't like that and decided to kill him. I don't know how you come out and make this accusation when we're not trying to make the suspect pool smaller. We're trying to make sure it's right. And if you're not 100% sure that Will knew this person, you don't say it. Because again, now people on the outside are going to be looking at their friends and family, people who actually knew Will, instead of considering the possibility that maybe this was the guy down the road who just happened to be in the area at that time. I don't like it. I think it's an overcorrection. Do I think Will could have known this person? Of course. The question is, how well? Was this a close friend, or was it an acquaintance that maybe they had seen out once or twice? Or was it a friend slash neighbor that they had maybe spent some nights at their home? Pretty wide spectrum there, right? And I wouldn't narrow it down at this point. We want to make sure that everyone's still being considered. And we got more to cover. We're going to talk about it right after this break. You ever go through something tough? Maybe a breakup, a burnout, or even just that creeping anxiety that doesn't let you sleep and you're laying in bed thinking, I wish I had someone I could actually talk to about this. I've been there. I get it. And I've seen how powerful therapy can be for friends, for family, for the people close to me who are really struggling and needed help. But let's be honest, getting access to the right therapist, it can be a nightmare. You call around, people aren't taking new clients, they're not in your network, or it costs a fortune. And that's where Rula comes in. Rula is changing the game. They make high-quality mental health care accessible and affordable. Most people pay only $15 a session, and they take most major insurance. You answer a few quick questions, and Rula helps you find a licensed professional who meets your preferences, and you can be talking to someone as soon as the next day. And by the way, Rula has over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists in their network, so you're bound to find someone who fits what you're looking for. No wait lists, no frustrating back and forth. Rula makes it easy to find a mental health care provider who's accepting new patients, and appointments are available as soon as tomorrow. Plus, Rula sticks with you throughout your journey, checking in to make sure your care is actually helping you move forward. So if you've been thinking about therapy, or even if this is the first time you're considering it, this is your sign. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by your insurance. Visit Rula.com/detective to get started. That's RULA.com/detective. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget. Between diets, workouts, and endless advice, it's hard to know what actually works for weight loss and what's worth your time. That's why Hers offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications that now includes the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, you can lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps regulate your appetite, helps you eat less, and helps you keep the weight off. And the process is simple. Everything happens 100% online. You connect with a licensed provider who determines if treatment is right for you, and if prescribed, medications delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. Plus, you also get access to ongoing support, care team messaging, and lifestyle tools designed to help you build habits that actually last. So if you're ready to reach your goals, visit forhers.com/detective to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/detective. Once again, that's forhers.com/detective. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is a registered trademark by Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com. All right, we're back. And just 4 days after the announcement that the Moscow police believed that Will had been murdered, Matt Williams, the white supremacist whose name had previously surfaced during the investigation, he took his own life while in jail awaiting trial for the murders of the couple in California. And for me, and I definitely want to hear your opinion on this one, I think it's a coincidence. I don't think Matt was awaiting trial for the murder of two people. And when he heard that Moscow now believed that Will had been murdered, that was what put him over the edge. More than likely, Matt knew he was going down for the murder of the California couple, and he was just looking for an opportunity to take his own life. Just coincidentally, it happened around the same time as this announcement. That's my opinion, but I want to hear your thoughts. But after this occurred with Matt, there was very little media coverage about Will's case. And as the years passed, Will's mother, Leslie, continued her law enforcement career and eventually became a police chief. Sadly, in 2013, Will's father, Keith, passed away without ever learning what happened to his son. The following year, the sheriff's former lead investigator spoke with the Tribune about the case, and during that interview, he said the case was completely solvable. He also revealed that the strongest lead he ever developed centered on Will and Jerry's former neighbor, the man who had worked for Jerry and then fled to Florida. The investigator said, quote, "Nothing about what this guy did or said ever really made sense. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough information for us to really compel him to come in and do an official interrogation." And that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I wish I had a better explanation. You can be as creative as you want, but to get someone to sit down and actually conduct an interview with you, if you don't have probable cause, they don't have to speak to you. I've talked about Michelle Norris's case before, and there's two people that I always have thought about when it comes to her murder. One, I confronted on Breaking Homicide. The other, and I've been public about this, is her father. And I can tell you that as a police officer and after the fact, I made multiple attempts to speak with her father. he never really wanted to do it. We did send some detectives down there and he gave a brief interview, but he's never sat down with me. And without evidence to compel him to do so, you're shit out of luck. And if they are responsible, it's in their best interest not to speak with you. So I'm not saying I like it, but it is the reality of our job. And I always try to give you guys a full perspective because listening to these podcasts or watching documentaries, some do believe that if we think you're responsible for a crime, you got to speak to us. And that's simply not the case. So as a detective, it's tough and it makes your job harder. But on the other hand, as a citizen, right? If you don't have something tangible to say I committed the crime and I don't want to speak with you and potentially incriminate myself for something I didn't do, we have a right to do that as well. It's just the way it is. And this may surprise some of you, but I don't disagree with that. We don't want cowboys out there just interrogating anybody they want. There's got to be more substance to it. All right, let's fast forward to 2022. That spring, Moscow police spoke with Northwest Public Broadcasting about the status of Will's case 23 years after the disappearance and murder. They said investigators continue to receive tips and leads. However, they still lack that one piece of evidence needed to tie everything together. They believe someone out there knows exactly what happened to Will, and they hope that person will eventually come forward. Unfortunately, that is the last update I have in this case. Will's cause of death has never been determined, no suspects have ever been named, and more than two decades later, his family is still hoping that one day they'll be able to answer the question, who killed Will Hendrick? All right, let's dive into this perspective, and I want to talk about a couple things that I think most of us can agree on. This person was in the vicinity that night of this party in that apartment complex, at least during that period of time. And they're a local. There's someone who knows the area, and there's someone who's familiar with this remote location. Maybe it's somewhere they had been as a child, or maybe it's somewhere they had went to party or go hiking. Whatever the case, this isn't just some transient passing through. I also think it's a high degree of certainty that whoever's responsible for this will meet them at this location. I don't know if they were at one of the parties or just a resident in one of the other apartments in that apartment complex, but that's where the first interaction occurred. Before I go any further, because I do believe this was a murder, I just want to acknowledge the possibility, although small, that this could have been a tragic accident. The only reason I'm really hesitant to go there, and I'm 99% sure it wasn't, is because if it was an accident, right? If Will had driven out to this location in the woods because who knows, he maybe got lost. How does his car get to the secondary location? He's already stranded or dead at location number one. Someone drove his car to location number two. And if we knew where location number one actually was, we could compare it to location number two where the car was found. My belief, just based on the limited information that we have, is that they're extremely far apart and he would not have been able to walk from one location to the other. Therefore, there has to be a second person. But I just want to put it out there to qualify things. Now, in addition to this accident theory, which I don't believe in, I also want to mention one other theory that I'm also not buying. And again, I mean no disrespect by this, but I know the part-time detectives out there will hammer me for this because I always say you got to consider all possibilities. And for that reason, I have to mention Jerry. Jerry, if you're watching this, I want you to know that I want the same thing as you. I want to find out what happened. And I don't think you had anything to do with what happened to Will, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention that part of the investigation would be vetting you to ensure that you were home that entire night and that your alibi checks out. I know in the past, Will would go to the neighbor's house, and more than likely, if he did drive home that night alone, that's where he went. But we also have to consider the possibility that he did go home and something may have happened between you and him that got out of hand. What that would have been, I have no possible idea. And again, I mean nothing by it, but I think at this point, you would respect the fact if you had someone come in and say, hey, listen, everyone's a suspect until I prove otherwise. At least that would tell you that you have someone working this case that will leave no stone unturned, regardless of how unlikely it may be. But I'm not going to spend too much time on that because, as I've said, I don't believe this was an accident. I don't believe Jerry was involved. So I want to turn my attention to the theories that I think are more plausible. With that out of the way, let's talk about what I actually believe. The person we're looking at here is potentially a neighbor, a partygoer, maybe a little combination of both, maybe a cop hater, knew that Will's family was a family of law enforcement, didn't like that, or it was a random stranger. We already know that Will walked into the basement apartment of someone he did not know. And as I said in the episode, that person might have been okay, but maybe he did it again, and the next person wasn't as okay with it, and they didn't allow Will to leave. And then maybe they took his car with him, or after some conversations, this person convinced Will to go for a ride with him. And that's when things went down. I also think there's something to be said for the possibility that maybe Will didn't know this person at all, but developed a relationship with them that night. That's why I had a problem with what Moscow said, that this person was someone Will knew. Well, how well? Did they know him for weeks, months, or did he just meet them that night and developed a rapport pretty quickly? It's possible. You could be looking at a situation where, I'm not saying this person who's responsible is Jeffrey Dahmer, but convinces Will somehow that there's some flirtation there and that they may be interested in him, and they decide to quote unquote go for a ride, and they go to this primary location out in this remote area. Things go down, and either it was premeditated where that was the plan all along, or something happens while they're out there and this person kills Will, leaves his body there, and then dumps the car in a secondary location, hoping that they'll never find Will. And I think this theory does have some validity to it, whether it's a random stranger or someone who was an actual party goer. I do believe that Will left that night and was more than likely still alive. He was either driving the vehicle or someone was driving it for him. The question is, where did they go after that? And if by chance there was nobody else in the car, then this potential neighbor theory where Will maybe comes home and, as he has done in the past, he doesn't want to wake up Jerry, so he goes to the neighbor's house. That theory becomes way more possible, right? That becomes the prominent theory that we really got to hone in on, because if we were able to prove that Will not only left that party in his car, but he was alone, I don't believe in 100% certainties, but it's pretty high up there that this neighbor's the person we're looking for. But without knowing that, it's also just as possible that he met someone at the party and left with them and never even made it back to his residence. Because as we know, his car and the remote location was nowhere near where Will lived. And it is always possible that there was something that went down at this actual apartment where there was a fight that went south. But then you would still have to believe that there's multiple people involved here. They all witnessed what happened. Will was put in his own car, and they've just all kept this a secret for 27 years. Wouldn't be the first time it happened. It's just much less likely. Whenever more than one person knows what happened, and I've said this before, it's no longer a secret. And there's going to be the main primary aggressor, the person responsible, and there's just going to be the outliers, right? The people who were present, maybe witnessed it, but didn't actually participate. Most of those people are not going to be willing to run the risk of being charged with a murder, right? They're going to come out and say what happened, whether it's because of a guilty conscience or self-preservation. So is it on my list? Absolutely. It has to be. But I think the other theories, and we'll go over them again, are much more plausible. And that again would be the possibility that we'll meet someone there, maybe not at the party, but around the party, and they hit it off and they decide to go for a ride. It may not even be sexual in nature, just, hey, we're going to go somewhere else. I'm not done partying. I'm drunk. Will you drive me? I know another place where they have something going on right now. Let's go out there and check it out. And Will's too intoxicated to realize that this person's not driving anywhere. They're going into the woods. And he may never realize it, or when he does, it's too late. And exactly what I described is what goes down. There's a murder in the woods, leaves the body there, dumps the car at a secondary location, and somehow gets back to their residence. How they did it, I don't know. The second strongest theory, and I would put them as 1A and 1B. I don't think one's better than the other. Will does leave the party, speeds out of there, spits up some gravel because he's intoxicated. He's driving recklessly. He gets back to his neighborhood, but instead of going into the house with Jerry, he goes to the neighbors. And as I suggested, there may have been something going on there, or it could have just been an argument. Maybe the neighbor was upset that Will came home when he did in the condition that he was in, and there was a fight. It got out of hand. We know Will wasn't afraid to stick up for himself, and he was severely injured or killed. And at that point, the neighbor gets into the car with Will, brings him to this refrigerated truck, dumps the car after that, comes back to the truck, and then flees to Florida. And before he leaves, he dumps at least parts of Will's body in this location. And that's the only struggle I do have with this, because we talk about this refrigerated truck, and you would believe that would have been used to transport Will's body. But we know that at least Will's head was found at a remote location not far from where he was last seen. So that doesn't really align. Why would you need the refrigerated truck if you're not transporting the body? We got to be honest about it here. Could the neighbor be involved? Yes. Maybe he dumps Will's body in the woods and takes the refrigerated truck to just make it look like he had a job to do that night, giving him an alibi as to why he couldn't be responsible for Will's murder. Could be a coincidence that it just happened to be a refrigerated truck. That's also in play. But the fact that he wasn't willing to cooperate, I always say you have the right to say no. I also have the right to look at you with an eyebrow raised, right? If you have nothing to do with it and this is all a coincidence, you would want to speak with law enforcement to clear your name. 27 years later, this person has never done that. So where do we go from here? It's a pretty standard playbook. We need new eyes and ears on this case. The people who are working it, they're either retired or they're complacent at this point. We need a fresh perspective. We need new detectives who have some promise to start from square one and look at all the evidence, all the information. On top of that, they need to go re-interview every single person that's willing to talk to them. And once they get done with all those interviews, they need to go check everyone's criminal history again. Yeah, they might have checked it at the time, but what have they done since? Do we have a pattern of behavior that would suggest this person has a predisposition to violence? Was it someone who was responsible for what happened to Will and over the years continued to get in fights where they hurt multiple people? You don't know until you check. So even though they might have been clean at the time when the incident occurred, it doesn't mean they didn't have a history afterwards. So that's something you have to do as well. The next thing I'm going to mention, kind of a long shot, most likely not in play, but depending on what was collected from the vehicle at the time when it was actually searched, I know there was no hair, I know there was no blood, but I do wonder if there were swabs collected, and if there were, do we have the ability to send them off for testing now? With the advancements in science and technology and the way it is now, you could take a swab that was initially examined and came back negative and resubmit it, and there's a chance you might get some DNA. And as always, it ends with you guys, the community. If there's multiple people involved here, maybe saw something or heard something and didn't think it was significant at the time, you potentially have the ability to solve this case. As investigators have said, they're looking for that one key piece of evidence that ties it all together. It may not be a smoking gun. It may just be the connective tissue to tie one person to one alibi or discredit an alibi. And you don't even know it. So what do you have to lose? If you know any information, please come forward. And just to recap, to make sure you have all the information, 25-year-old Will Hendrick was last seen at approximately 3:30 a.m. on January 10th, 1999, after leaving the party in Moscow, Idaho. More than 3 years later, partial remains discovered in a remote area of Latah County were identified as belonging to Will. Investigators believed he was murdered, but his cause of death has never been determined. More than 27 years later, no arrests have been made, and what happened to Will remains unknown. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Latah County Sheriff's Office at 208-882-2216. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Will. Thinking about you guys, it's unfortunate that Keith passed away without knowing what happened to his son. But a lot of you are still here, and you're still fighting for answers, and now we've joined that fight, and I'm hoping we're able to give them to you. whether it's just bringing some more attention to this case or something I said jogs a memory for someone in that community and they finally come forward and they contact law enforcement. I really hope that sooner than later, I get a phone call or an email letting me know that they caught the person. They have them in custody and they're going to answer for what they did. You guys deserve that. And most importantly, Will deserves that. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there and I'll see you soon.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.